All right, we're live. So I'm here with Rory and Corbin. We're going to have a little chat about the venous congestion cases we've been collecting, and we're going to do some nice little things with. So, Rory, you want to take us off with one of your recent cases?
So I've had a number of cases recently that all have been ECMO, VA ECMO cases. And the interesting part is, you know, looking at the circulatory system with ECMO, and it kind of, you've changed it all. And all these patients had venous cannulas inserted somewhere in their IVC and into their right atrium, and pulling out about probably 4 to 5 liters at a time. So we're pretty decongested quite quickly, meaning their IVC, had some phasicity to it, and then their portal and venous system, though, were mildly congested, were pretty decongested, considering what the patients were through. Most of them were heart failure requiring VA ECMO. But if you looked at their renal system, it showed pretty significant venous congestion, meaning I think most of them were biphasic, and one of them had monophasic intermittently venous flow. And so we had kind of been talking about what that actually means, and Corbin had some really interesting things to say.
Yeah, so there's two parts to the intrarenal Doppler. The one is the renal resistive index, which is kind of telling you, you know, some characteristic of the arterial blood flow, and then below that's above the baseline, and then below the baseline you have the intrarenal venous flow. And those sort of track the, if you were to Doppler the hepatic vein, the S wave and the D wave, in sort of progression. So really they're telling you kind of two things about the microcirculation through the kidney: is one's venous and one's arterial.
Okay, so you've got the incoming and you've got the resistance to outflow in the same assessment, basically.
Right, and that's because those vessels are running parallel with each other, and you just happen to have the PW Doppler, you know, gate, you know, interrogating both of them at the same time.
So if you just look at this, if you have normal or near normal arterial flow, but you have signs of venous congestion, what would that tell you?
If you had normal arterial flow and signs of venous congestion, so. I'm not sure what to do with that. Sometimes there's something about the renal resistive index that has to do with the complete vascular compliance, where it doesn't seem to indicate a problem with arterial flow in some cases. And so, you know, when I've noticed that I've got these people with, you know, biphasic or monophasic venous flow patterns, and the renal resistive index looks okay. And then I'll have other people that, you know, it's definitely off. And I think that kind of where it's going with that, and that, you know, there's a lot of stuff needs to be figured out, is that if your renal resistive index is off, something's going on if you think it's a new thing, and you kind of have to figure out what's going on. I mean, it could be, you know, intrinsic renal disease like an ATN or something, or maybe it's congestion, or maybe there's some microvascular, you know, flow problems induced by, you know, bad humors in the kidney by sepsis or something like that. I've noticed, one thing is that, if you look at, patients admitted to the ICU, it's they're three or four times more likely to develop a kidney injury if their renal resistive index is, you know, high, like starting about 0.77 or so. And one thing I've noticed is in almost all the patients, if you add vasopressin to those people, the renal resistive index almost always gets better. And you know, why that is, I'm not completely sure. You know, Josh Farkas had said that maybe it's just kind of the norepinephrine goes off because you changed the where the, you know, your SVR is coming from, or you know, maybe it has something to do with the vasopressin being an efferent constrictor, not so much an afferent constrictor, that it just kind of improves your GFR and I don't know, you know, it's very kind of complicated, the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, I just intuitively, I would sort of surmise that if I've got a normal looking renal resistive index and I've got signs of congestion, then my problem probably isn't, you know, isn't the cardiac output, isn't a forward flow problem. And maybe this congestion is related to, you know, over resuscitation or you know, obstructive congestion or who knows. I was actually wondering about that when you're talking about the ECMO, like your ECMO cannulas. Do you think they have any impact on renal venous congestion?
The cannula itself, blocking flow?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, they pull a whole lot of fluid out. They decompress pretty quickly. My thought was the capsule of the kidney itself creating a somewhat of a, you know, a localized compartment syndrome. And so you're much more likely to see interstitial edema in the kidney than you are, you know, intra-abdominally, where you'd start to see it with like decreased portal flow. And so it's a much earlier marker of nephrosarcoma or interstitial edema. And need for deresuscitation than either the hepatic or portal, which are much more direct reflections of what's going on in the right atrium.
And have you seen in serial scans, have you seen this go down over hours to days?
Days, yeah. I mean, so we had a few patients where we pulled like large amounts of fluid, something like 16 or 20 liters off in a 2 to 3 day period. And you have your renal flows go back to, you know, the normal phasicity that you see in a normal renal venous flow.
Yeah, you know, Rory, when you showed me those pictures, it was kind of like there was a lag between the, you know, the venous flow in the kidney and the portal. Like the portal seemed to get better much quicker, and then, you know, the kidney kind of still looked like it was congested and it wasn't getting all that better until like that very last, you know, set of pictures you sent when everything looked really good.
Yeah. And so my thought is that it's more of a representation of the interstitial edema in the kidney than both the hepatic and portal because of that capsule that's going to cause increased pressures and resistance to flow.
Yeah. And that would make the most sense.
Okay. And so how are you guys clinically using these markers of congestion in terms of stop sign or reverse sign?
If I see that congestion, I'm you know, pulling the trigger on diuresing them. There's been, you know, just so many cases where, you know, the labs look bad and someone thinks they're pre-renal and you look and it's really congested. There people would be, you know, wanting to give fluids instead of diuretics, but you give a diuretic and creatinine gets better.
Yeah. And you know what? This may be explained in a way. There's a time lag to that, right? Like you see that they're responding to diuresis. You see that, you know, clearly that's getting things moving. But then the creatinine itself takes, you know, a day to 2 days, I've noticed, too. And even the first day might still be rising, and then you might have a lot of pundits saying, like, no, you've lost your mind, you know, we have to stop this diuretic nonsense. But you have to kind of push on, and maybe that takes that nephrosarca a couple of days to ease off, and then for the creatinine to finally start to come down.
Yeah, I find the creatinine is definitely delayed. I think even the flows are pretty delayed. You know, you'll do some pretty aggressive diuresis, and I find it takes a couple days to start seeing real changes in portal and renal vein flow, especially the renal vein flow where it's a few days before I see good changes. I don't know if you guys experienced that.
Yeah. I think I see the portal change relatively quickly, but yeah, the renal is not as fast.
I have seen it get better. You know, if I see someone on the very front end of my shift and, you know, they put out like, you know, 2-3 liters, I have seen it actually change sometimes, but at the same time, I've also found kidneys that are pretty congested and they still look congested after, you know, some fluid come off too.
Okay.
Yeah. I guess one of my questions is which one is going to be, and maybe it's not one, but which one is going to be the marker early on to stop resuscitation? You know, like you're early on in your resuscitation, you know, I would notice you really start seeing phasicity of your portal vein really early. And then now that I've been doing more and more renal, I find that, you know, you see it almost instantly, that those changes in renal flow. And maybe we should be stopping way before we get to a biphasic renal flow.
Yeah, I mean, Sorry, go ahead, Phil.
Have you correlated that to just straight up IVC? Because I've found that, to me, and at least in my logic and what I've understood from whatever little data there is out there, is you kind of have to get that plethoric IVC before the pressure transduces really much anywhere else. So that has been my stop sign. I certainly don't push anyone. If I find someone with a full IVC, I certainly stop all fluids. And then I use the other stuff to decide whether I want to pull that off, like, right away or not or whatever. Any thoughts on that?
That's been my strategy on that is, you know, the IVC, when that gets fat, no more fluids. And if they're still hypotensive, it's time to add a vasopressor if their SVR is low. You know, of course, if it's a cardiac output problem, it's an inotrope. But, if I do see something on the portal vein or see something in the kidney, then that's actually an active, you know, go with
right.
the diuresis, where it's just the IVC, they stop with the fluids.
Okay.
Yeah, for the most part, I find that I see some renal vein dysfunction with IVCs that have variation, again, which makes me think that that's interstitial edema. Like the other day, I had a patient that was post CABG, had a moderate resuscitation intra-op and then pre-op or post-op, was extubated, breathing, had an IVC with variation, but had monophasic renal venous flow. It was so strange that I checked it like four or five times to make sure I was doing it, getting the right signal. But she really had, you know, pretty significant congestion of her kidneys with an IVC that was moving pretty well.
Wow. That fits a little bit with, like, we were lucky enough to get a pre-read of William Beaubien-Souligny and André Deneau's latest case report, where they were showing live TEE renal Doppler, and they're showing how even with CVPs that certainly were within normalish range, I think the CVP went up to 11, and then they saw right away abnormalities in renal flow, and when they did some interventions, got it down to 2 or 3 or something like that, it normalized. That's not a very impressively high, that certainly wouldn't correspond to a big fat plethoric IVC. That would be something that would be more in the, you know, the mid-range.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a paper that had come out like a couple months ago that had shown that the two biggest predictors of, they looked at a bunch of different things, but one of them was the renal resistive index and the central venous pressures. And those two things, especially in combination, were the biggest predictors of a bad outcome in the patients. So there's, you know, maybe the kidney's kind of that canary in the coal mine, you know.
Right. Okay. If you could send us that that reference, we'll put it at the bottom of the podcast notes.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
All right. So we'll be putting together a few cases and trying to get them out there somewhere, and also creating a bit of a registry where we can enter cases. And so anyone interested in joining, discussing, more than guys, any closing comments?
No, I think that's about it. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah,
all right. We'll talk soon.
All right.